Monday, September 16th, 2006. Welcome to Industry Misinterpretations with James Robertson of Syncom Systems and Michael Lucas Smith of Software with Style.
So what time is it over there? It's like 11:30?
Yeah, it's 11:30. Yeah, time zones be damned.
Yeah, well, you know, at least we're on standard time here.
American standard time.
That's right. There's that book by Cory Doctorow, East Coast Tribe, I think he called it.
What's that?
Oh, the title was a play on people living on East Coast American time, regardless of where they lived.
Yeah.
I don't think it was about that exactly, but the title was funny.
I think yesterday or the day before, it was Programmer Day. It was the 256th day of the year.
Oh. Well, so we have to wait for... Well, I guess there's no other day, maybe unless you want to wait for 384 or 640 on the two-year anniversary. But, you know, we don't need any more days than 640.
Yep. No, definitely not, I mean.
So I guess there were a few things that, interesting things that happened last week. There was the whole Strong Talk.
Yeah, keep going, sorry.
No, there was that whole StrongTalk thing, open sourcing, finally.
Yeah, I mean, StrongTalk actually came out a couple of years ago. Sun released the unfinished image, but not the actual VM source code. And just last week, they released the VM source code as well.
Yeah, I remember when they did that. I downloaded it and did some benchmarks, and there were areas where it was dramatically faster even than the current VisualWorks. I mean, on, say, arithmetic and... You know, integer and floating point math, for instance, it was much faster than VisualWorks is now. But most things, you know, standard kinds of application type small talk, it really wasn't any faster, although it is older technology.
Yeah, I have to give it the fact that it is older, yet it seems to keep its own against VisualWorks. I mean, for general execution, when I benchmarked it, general execution, VisualWorks was just slightly ahead. But because of the way that StrongTalk's able to box and unbox things, such as floats, it really does have an advantage there. And I'm sure there's things that VisualWorks will be able to learn off it now that the VM source code's available.
Yeah, and a lot of the VM optimization is just out there now for anybody to look at. Now, of course, the question is whether anybody will have time to look at it. I can tell you here at Syncom, you know, our VM guys, I'm sure they want to look at it. I haven't spoken to them specifically about it. But whether they have the actual physical time to try to adopt any of the technology out of there, or for that matter, whether any of the technology in there is something they don't already know about. I mean, for the most part, I'm pretty sure that that Elliot Miranda already knows most of the tricks and techniques in there. He just doesn't have the time to implement them.
Well, I mean, if you take the example of boxing and unboxing floats, that's something that's actually in the 64-bit VM for VisualWorks and for the Gemstone Smalltalk as well. But you've got to take into account the history of this anamorphic small talk, which is called Strong Talk, that Sun bought. And that is that it came from a different programming language called Self originally, which had two different compilers. It had a fast compiler for general execution, and it also had a background slow compiler. And it was this initial research in the language Self that allowed them to make the Strong Talk VM. And we all know where that ended up, which is the Java hotspot technology.
Yeah, it did take them a year or two to adapt the dynamic language technology over to the static language they were using.
Yeah, I know, but underneath, the actual hotspot VM still is reasonably dynamic. The class loader stuff in the VM architecture for Java is what put most of the static typing in there. And the hotspot VM has most of the same properties as StrongTalk as well, so... You benchmark the arithmetic and the floating point stuff, etc., and it's about the same. They did a pretty good job porting that stuff across.
Okay, so what does that tell you about the other thing that came out this week from Sun, where they hired the two JRuby guys?
Yeah, well, they've obviously got some tricks up their sleeve, but it's taken them a very long time to realize they should be doing this sort of stuff. You'd think that when Microsoft started announcing the multiple language platform with the CLR that some would have perked up and realized they already had what they needed in their VM to compete. But it's taken them this long to realize they really should be hiring in the talent for that.
Yeah, well, I rather like the quote from Gilad Braca when he he let slip the dry statement that it's come to our attention that people would like to program in things other than Java.
Yeah, it's a very myopic world, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is people give Microsoft a lot of crap, and you know, it's not that they don't deserve it. I mean, I could go off on a whole DRM rant if you gave me time, but leaving that aside for the moment, you know, they seem to have picked up on this whole dynamic language thing a lot earlier than Sun did. They expressed some interest in Iron Python. They brought in Jim Hugenin, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, a couple of years back now. And actually, they've got a guy on staff doing Vista Smalltalk, which I wanted to talk about in a little while. But, you know, just staying on the Java VM and JRuby, Sun was really slow coming to this.
Yeah, and actually Microsoft's got a very long history of dabbling with dynamic languages. David Simmons, who does the S-sharp or SmallScript, has a reasonably close relationship with Microsoft, I believe.
I think he actually works there now.
He works there now, okay. I remember him talking to me in Seattle several years ago about the big in-house fight they had between choosing Smalltalk and choosing BASIC, and when it came down to it, Bill Gates decided to go with BASIC because it was what he knew. Yeah, so Microsoft's certainly been playing with dynamic languages. I mean, technically, BASIC's a dynamic language too, for a very long time. So the Iron Python thing, that's version 1's just come out this last week as well. That's not that surprising. And yeah, we're seeing that the
Vicom
team...
There's an interesting side story on that, actually. The whole thing about Visual Basic and Smalltalk, there's actually an interesting side story on that. If you have to hop back into the Wayback Machine with Professor Peabody and go back to the Park Place Digitalk merger, which, interestingly enough, I'm actually talking to somebody young enough to not really remember that real well. But for those of us who are old-timers in the industry, when that happened, Park Place agreed to the merger, or basically bought Digitalk, because Park Place management was afraid that Digitalk was talking to Microsoft. I distinctly recall talking to a sales manager at Park Place and asking him exactly why would that be bad. Which is kind of what we're seeing now that Microsoft has some people working on Smalltalk. I see that as nothing but validation for the space.
Yeah, and if you look at the plan for the CLR and .NET VMs, etc., every release has more and more dynamic features, loosening up the VM, allowing more dynamic features to be introduced into other languages, and allowing people like David Simmons with S-sharp to implement their languages to the most advanced ability they can. So it's a very interesting world that's opening up there. It's kind of a shame that Microsoft's really just limiting it to the Windows platform.
Yeah, now the interesting thing is I took a look at, I've been following Peter Fisk's Vista Smalltalk blog, and he's been posting some interesting stuff on the capabilities of his new little toy here, Vista Smalltalk. He's got a blog post up, I guess he put it up yesterday, where he's got some examples of dynamically loading GUIs and forms and, you know, basic Smalltalk applications down into a browser because the components necessary are in, you know, are already on your client if you're running Microsoft Windows. And, of course, if you're using Internet Exploder, or Explorer, I guess I should call it, you can actually load all of that stuff.
Yeah, you need IE7, at least, with the .NET framework. And if you're running a beta version of Vista, if you can get your hands on that, the same application that you can run inside the IE browser, you can run as a regular desktop application. So that's actually pretty exciting stuff there.
Yeah, that gives you Smalltalk scripting right there on the client. And, you know, again, I say that's, you know, as much as I'm sure there are people in companies like, well, certainly even people where I work at Syncom who might worry about this, but again, I see this just as validation. And since Microsoft isn't really about cross-platform, you know, any interest in Smalltalk that exists on Windows will eventually cross to other platforms, and that'll point in our direction.
Yeah, and actually, I'd say it's a bit of worry for Smalltalks like Dolphin Smalltalk. You know, bedding yourself down on one particular platform, especially the Windows platform, is rather risky. Microsoft has a very long history of changing its APIs from version to version. You can just see that with their programming languages, but their APIs in general as well. And there's a big change on the way with Vista. For example, their entire user interface paradigm is shifting from bit blittings, you know, non-pixel-based graphics, to scalar vector graphics. Most applications, you'll be able to zoom in and zoom out however you want. And as well as the scalar graphics in 2D, they've also integrated the scalar graphics in 3D. So there's some nice examples on the Vista Smalltalk that embed 2D and 3D scalar objects directly into widgets from Smalltalk code. And this kind of capability that's being shared across all these different languages, that's only going to be a good thing.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I think the Dolphin guys might have gotten caught a little flat-footed just by timing. I mean, I understand exactly what happened to them in that sense. When we were looking at upgrading Object Studio, from Object Studio is our is one of our two small talks here at CINCOM. We have VisualWorks and we have Object Studio. If again, for those of you who are old timers, Object Studio has had its roots in Enfin, and it has not moved along as quickly as VisualWorks has. So one of the things we looked at starting 3 years ago was where to take that forward, how to move it forward. And one of the things we looked at was, well, since it's a Windows-specific product, we were seriously considering putting it on the .NET platform. The trouble was, at the time, .NET 1.0 was out, and they were talking about 1.1 and 2.0, well, actually 1.1, I think, was out, and they were talking about .NET 2.0. And it really sounded like there were a lot of dynamic features in 2.0 that would enable what we wanted to do, but it didn't look like it was going to be available in the time frame we were interested in. So we went ahead and started putting Object Studio on top of VisualWorks, which actually is creating a very nice product for us. But the Dolphin guys being on Windows, I think they might have been caught by the same problem. At the time, they probably most would have liked to get on top of .NET. It wasn't easily possible.
Yeah, I mean, surely they'll be able to plug into that stuff eventually. And I think that's the sort of thing that's on the VisualWorks platform in the future as well, moving on from Pollock to Chagall and the like, and plugging into the Windows widgets. It will be a whole new world with the scalar APIs as opposed to the regular pixel-based APIs.
Yeah, and I'm sure they're actually, now that we've brought Travis Griggs on the team as an engineer, he's already talking about some things in that direction. So I think having some fresh blood on the team will actually be quite useful that way.
And it's interesting to note that Apple's platform has been scalar for a very, very long time. Even Mac 8 and 9 used a PostScript variant for its user interface, which is a scalar system. So this is not actually a particularly new innovation by Microsoft, but it is a big thing for the Windows world.
Yeah, that's, you're talking about the Mac platform, having only gotten myself a Mac Mini about a year ago. Actually, it was almost exactly a year ago, because when my hard drive went bonkers, I was actually still under warranty. The Mac is not really a platform I've been as expert on as I'd like. But yet, there's some interesting things happening on the Mac, and actually, the development language that's used to connect down on the Mac is Objective-C, which, you know, again, is more of a dynamic language than C, C++, and Java is. And the interesting thing is that if you've been watching the operating system releases from Apple, you've noticed that they've been progressing a whole heck of a lot faster than Microsoft has.
Yeah, even at the language level, the Objective-C language on Apple even includes garbage collection now, which is not something that Objective-C originally had.
Yeah.
And I think there are even variants of Objective-C that have block closures. So Apple is certainly investing, you know, in the right direction there. And certainly the way that you can now run Windows software and Mac software side by side, that's brilliant. I've seen that run on Rowan Bunning, a colleague of mine's Mac. And it, you know, makes me want to actually get a Mac. And that's saying a lot. I've been an anti-Mac person pretty much most of my life. In fact, in high school, I converted a friend from Mac to PC.
Well, actually, people have been even reading my blog up until about a year ago know that I was never all that keen on the Mac platform. I've been a fairly constant detractor of it. But, yeah, over the last year and a half, I've become more and more of a fan of it. And it's, I mean, my wife's experience on the PC she has in the living room, you know, every so often a rather explosive language comes out of there. She tries to figure out how to print to the printer today. And I noticed that my Mac never has trouble locating the Windows shares. So
that's true.
You know, one of the interesting things is that I've actually asked, I've put in a formal request here at CINCOM that whenever the next round of machine upgrades comes by, I've asked them to get me a Mac instead of a PC because I could run both Windows and Mac OS. And given that our product is cross-platform, I could actually demonstrate the last good thing running cross-platform.
Yeah, I mean that. I mean, if you can get it, then why not? And yeah, they're actually a pretty good machine too. They've got this dual CPU there that I think they're both 2 gigahertz individually, but most of the software actually uses them in parallel, and you can get up to a good 4 gigahertz on high-definition movie playback, etc., really actually working.
Yeah, that'd be kind of a cool thing, and I don't know if our IT group would be happy with it, because they're pretty much a Windows shop, but even so, if I can get a hold of a Mac for work purposes, that'd be a really nice thing.
So this kind of leads to the fact that Apple has just recently upgraded their iPod to 80 gig and reduced the cost of all their iPods. And I'm thinking of actually upgrading my iPod to one of the new 80 gig ones as well.
You still have that one you got at Smalltalk Solutions a couple years back?
Yeah, I do, and it works very well. And the thing about the 80 gig is that I'll never ever run out of space, and I can put my pictures on it, etc. With the 40 gig, I hit the limit occasionally and have to purge music I'm not so fond of anymore. But with the 80 gig and the color screen and the fact that they're actually opening up the APIs to develop software on there, and that's all very exciting.
Yeah.
Which kind of leads to the whole Zoom thing, doesn't it?
Well, I don't know. I think the phrase that comes to my mind with Zoom is that Microsoft screwed the pooch.
They seem to be fighting against themselves instead of their competitor, for one thing. I think I read a blog post where somebody listed off 5 different services that Microsoft provides that aren't even compatible with the Zoom.
Yeah, and they had to, they actually had to dig into the license agreement. The specifics, the README files, the documentation, to find out what kinds of players it was and wasn't compatible with, or services it was and wasn't compatible with. Yeah, a lot of the Plays for Sure stuff they've been promoting for the last 3, 4, 5 years now, they just left all those players hanging. So if you were down at Best Buy before they released this and picked up, a SanDisk on the assumption that it would work with Microsoft's new stuff, you just found out you were wrong.
Tough luck. Actually, the thing that struck me about the Zoom when it was first announced was the Wi-Fi capability. I thought, well, that could be really interesting, but the little skeptic part in my brain said, no, they'll do something to it that won't work properly. And it turns out I was right. They've set it up so that whenever it shares music, it wraps up the music in its own DRM, and the DRM will destroy the music in 3 days' time.
Yeah, and there's some interesting implications to that. It hits one of the interesting edge cases of DRM and copyright and law, in that if you have released your music under, say, a common
Creative Commons.
What's that?
The Creative Commons.
Yeah, the Creative. You released under the Creative Commons license, and that music gets wrapped in that DRM on its way out, it's actually a violation of that license to do that. Now, I don't know how much music is actually released under that, but that kind of problem is not going to get smaller.
Well, I mean, if you're getting Creative Commons, as soon as you publish anything, you own the copyright to it, and nobody has the right to transform it into a new form and republish it in any way, shape, or form. So the fact that they're going to wrap it up in the DRM format and send that across to another machine is a violation of your own personal copyright from the get-go. So it's not just an affront to things like Creative Commons, it's an affront to copyright in general.
Yeah, although there's actually even a more practical problem to my mind, and that is that I figure that there's inevitably going to be some kind of software bug in one of those systems where what's going to happen is somebody's going to share music. It's going to go across, the DRM files are going to go across to some one of their friends, and it's accidentally going to mark all of their music as ready to expire in 3 days. And you'll see the support cases coming into Microsoft Central asking, where'd my music go? And since there's not going to be any record of the stuff they ripped off CD, it's just gone.
So it's a case of technology jumping ahead of an actual user requirement. It's actually some sort of industry requirement that's completely untested, and good luck to Microsoft if they can make it work and if they actually manage to sell this to people and people like it. But people are still pretty unhappy with Apple's DRM, let alone this kind of draconian sort of DRM that's coming along.
Yeah, well, it's like I said on my blog a couple of days ago, I'm not entirely certain whose service the DRM actually is. If you think about it, the RIAA and the Australian equivalent and the European equivalents, what they want is they want the DRM to protect them from pirates. But, in reality, the people who are dedicated pirates have tools. Heck, I could download software right now that'll strip all the DRM off everything I have over on my Mac and iTunes, and if I had Windows stuff, there's software for that too. And there's, you know, the dedicated pirates have streamlined versions of all this. It's not stopping them. It's not stopping even casual users who want to be able to do their own fair use stuff. The only people that's really irritating are the non-technical people who'd like to share music that have no idea what to do. So it's irritating mainstream customers, not really serving any valid purpose.
And it almost comes back to philosophy. If you say a lock only defends something against an honest person, then you're really saying, well, what are they actually trying to achieve here? Their philosophy on life must be that they believe everybody is not honest.
Well, that's really what it comes down to, is it really feels like they're treating their customer base as a pack of criminals. And, you know, that doesn't give me warm fuzzies about my vendor when I consider that they think of me as a criminal.
I remember a good 10 years ago a story where a person was caught and they were a big trafficker of copied music. Now, this person was making millions of dollars selling other people's videos, basically. Now, when it comes to it, that's the kind of guy that the people owning the copyright need to track down and stop. And those people are the kinds of people who just get around the DRM straight away. So it's almost as if they're putting their efforts into the wrong place. And personally, if I own copyright on something and somebody else is making money off my work, I'd be upset about that. Now, if other people are enjoying my work and they weren't making money off it, and I wasn't losing money off it, then, you know, where's the crime? But that fine line between making money and losing money is something that no one really can put their finger on, and that's where the RIAA and their equivalents around the world are crying foul, or in this case, I believe they're crying wolf.
Yeah, you know, I can't argue with any of that. It's just, it's not serving anybody's purposes. But, you know, I think with that, it looks like my time for this morning is up, because I'm busily being summoned from elsewhere, so I'm going to have to wrap this up and see how long it takes me in post-production to get this posted.
Yep.
And I think it's pretty late over. It's closing in on midnight your time anyway, isn't it?
Yep, 9 minutes to go till the new day starts.
Yeah, so, you know, you're in the future anyway, so, you know, if I keep talking, there's no telling what'll happen.
Okay, James, I'll talk to you later.
All right. Darling,
I gotta talk to you about the things you've been putting me through now. I gotta talk to you. I gotta be explained to you.